This is Diane Horn, your host on the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on KEXP Seattle 90.3 FM, by mobile app, and on the web at kexp.org. My guest today is Howard Garrett, co-founder, director, and president of the board of the Orca Network, a Washington State nonprofit dedicated to raising awareness about the whales of the Pacific Northwest and the importance of providing them healthy and safe habitats. Howard Garrett is here to tell us about the status of Puget Sound orcas and to announce Orca Month. Welcome.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
Would you like to begin by telling us about the Orca Network?
Well, the Orca Network is a nonprofit organization, and we are dedicated to raising awareness, to education, and to letting people know what the issues are and how they can help to protect and restore the habitat for the orcas that live around this area.
Who is involved in the Orca Network?
Oh, we have a board and a staff and hundreds of volunteers, and what really keeps us going are the people who report whales. We have a whale sighting network, and so people call in or email or Facebook or one way or another, let us know when they see whales, and they send in photos and videos. So we compile all that, and then we send it out by email and on our Facebook page and just keep people up to date on where the whales are. So it's sort of a fresh reminder all the time that we have whales in our neighborhood. They live around here all the time.
If you look worldwide, in what places do orcas live?
Well, we are incredibly fortunate here. It's highly unusual to have any kind of whales in sort of an urban location. But orcas themselves are cosmopolitan. They live everywhere, in the ocean, in warm, in cold, in shallow, in deep, every kind of ocean. They are adaptable and do live there. So they occupy 70% of the Earth's surface. So they are probably the most cosmopolitan mammal of any.
Roughly how many orcas are there worldwide?
Well, the count of orcas worldwide is not well known, actually. It's not well established. It's only around this area of the Pacific Northwest where there have been long-term counts of the orcas to have good estimates. A little bit in Alaska and a few other locations, but really it's not well established. And I think that's very interesting because what we do know is that the communities that have been counted are not large, in the hundreds, 200 or 300, maybe 500 in the communities that are intact, cohesive communities. And most of those are believed to be in Antarctica around the iceberg. So they're very hard to get access to and count in any way. So the official numbers given by the Fisheries Service are about 50,000 or more. But those are based on modeling of what the habitat could sustain, the carrying capacity of the habitats, but the actual field work doesn't show those kinds of numbers. So my understanding, just from doing my counts around the world, is probably 20, maybe 30,000 worldwide. That's not very many.
Would you give an overview of the orcas that inhabit the Puget Sound region? What different types live here and or pass through?
Well, this is where it gets very fascinating because we have not one but two completely different types of orcas that live in this area of Puget Sound and the greater Salish Sea up into Canadian waters. And those are called residents, which are the fish-eating, the salmon-eating type, and the transients, which are the mammal-eating types. And the transients don't like fish at all. They won't touch them, not interested. And the residents don't like mammals at all. They will not eat a mammal. They have completely separate and distinct diets, which is one of the most fascinating things about them.
Let's focus now on the southern resident orcas. How many are there and how are their communities organized?
The southern residents only number 83 at last count, and that's after 8 new babies in the last year and a half. So we've had a little baby boom, and yet they're still only at 83. A healthy population should be around 150 or 200 probably. But they've been decimated historically by shootings up until the 60s and 70s, and then the captures that removed about a third or so of the remaining population. And since then, their problem has been the lack of enough prey, enough of the Chinook salmon that they depend on. They're organized in really matrilines. We think of them in the pods, the J, K, and L pods, but those pods are made up of matrilines, which are mothers or grandmothers or sometimes great-grandmothers, and all of their offspring and their offspring, all the generations are arrayed around this elder female, and that comprises a matriline that sticks together always throughout life. They're always within earshot of each other, which could be a half a mile or so. But sometimes several matrilines will travel together, and that's how we first saw them back in the mid-70s and labeled the pods, J, K, and L pods.
Where can southern residents be found at different times of year?
Well, the southern residents travel around a range that extends from Northern California to, in extreme cases, Southeast Alaska or along the Vancouver Island. But their primary winter range is off Washington and Oregon, around the mouth of the Columbia River, a little bit north of Strait of Juan de Fuca in Canadian waters along Vancouver Island. But they will sometimes come in. They don't migrate like humpbacks and gray whales, so it's not very predictable. It really depends on where they're finding fish. In the winter, that tends to be out along the coast, and in the summer, in the inland waters around the San Juan Islands.
Would you say more about the habitat the orcas prefer?
The orcas like a habitat that is full of salmon, of especially Chinook, king salmon. And if you only go back 100 or maybe 150 years, they were plentiful year-round. Every river had winter, spring, summer, fall runs of Chinook salmon. So they were plentiful. There was no problem. And with a population of around 200, each one may eat maybe 200 pounds a day. But that still only amounts to maybe 400,000 or 500,000, 10 or 15-pound salmon in rough estimates. So there used to be roughly 10 to 12 million of those Chinook salmon all the time. So they depend on those. So they're along the continental shelf where the great majority of those salmon are headed for the Columbia River to head upstream to the upper reaches into the high-altitude wilderness habitat, and they pick them off at the mouth of the river or on their way to it.
How do the southern resident orcas communicate with each other?
The southern resident orcas have their own unique system. Well, each community around the world has their own unique system, which is a complete vocabulary, a repertoire of calls that have been documented and graphically described for science. And they use those calls to keep in touch with each other, to identify themselves. We don't know the meanings. What are the symbolic intents of their calls? But they chatter like they're in a cocktail party sometimes. There might be dozens of conversations going on at the same time when they're socializing. So they do a lot of this calling to each other, but it's in a language, basically. You have to call it a language because no other community uses the calls that they learn as they grow up in their families. And they are using that in ways to keep in touch with each other and to tell each other things that we don't even know.
Do we know if the J, K, and L pods can understand each other?
The J, K, and L pods can understand each other. In fact, they use pretty much all the same calls. Each matriline has a few identifiers, a few calls that they use a lot. They repeat those particular calls, but those are only a few of the dozens, maybe hundreds of calls that they all use. And so they have a common language. Each pod or matriline has their own dialect.
How long do the orcas live?
Orcas live lifespans very equivalent to human lifespans. The females do better. They live to probably average over 50 and can live to 80, 90, maybe 100. We don't know. The males, not so well. It's very hard to get a good estimate of an undisturbed population. And ours that have been counted, have been surveyed demographically, have been so disturbed over the years that it's hard to generalize from them to world numbers. But the males live to an average, as the statistics have it, to about 30. But we know one that lived to 60. So they can probably live beyond that.
I'm Diane Horn, and my guest is Howard Garrett, co-founder, director, and president of the board of the Orca Network. Our topic is Puget Sound Orcas and Orca Month, and you are tuned to the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on listener-powered KEXP 90.3 FM by mobile app and on the web at kexp.org. Well, you've alluded to this a bit already, but what is the current status of the southern resident orcas?
The southern resident orcas were listed as endangered in 2005, and that was after a drastic population decline between 1995 and 2000 of about 20%. They had almost reached 100, and they were down to under 80 by 2000 or 2001. They climbed up a little bit during the process of them getting listed, so they were in the mid to upper 80s in 2005, but since then they've dropped. They're back down to only 83, so they're barely holding on to their numbers, and we're very worried about the next few years.
What are the key threats to the orcas of the Puget Sound region?
Well, the primary threats, and the ESA listing launched a lot of research to find out what is the problem that is taking our orcas. And the primary threat that has been discovered, the correlations are incredibly high between prey abundance, and for them, prey are Chinook salmon. They traditionally, culturally prefer Chinook salmon. About 80% of their diet is Chinook, and they really can't survive, as we saw back in 95 to 2000, if they don't have abundant runs of Chinook salmon to eat. So really, we're looking at the need to restore Chinook salmon to keep our orcas around.
To what extent is pollution a threat to orcas?
Pollution is a threat, but it really is minimal compared to the prey problem. They do have what are called, legacy toxins that are in the water. Primarily, those are PCBs and other bioaccumulative toxins that get into their blood and into their bodies, and they mimic hormones, so they can suppress the immune system, and they can also affect the development of the fetuses of the newborns in those very delicate stages. But they tend to lodge in the fat supplies, and for whales in general and orcas, they have this 2 or 3 or 4 inch blubber layer that is where those toxins tend to lodge. And they're out of the bloodstream and out of the hormone system when they're in those fat supplies, so they really don't bother them that much until they become stressed for lack of food. And then they draw those fat supplies down for energy, and that releases those toxins into the blood, and that can compromise their immune systems.
To what extent is habitat destruction a threat to orcas?
Habitat destruction affects their prey base, whether it's rivers, wetlands, shorelines, eelgrass, all the places where the juvenile salmon find refuge and find food and protection from predators and all that. Before they can really head out into the open ocean, those are crucial for salmon restoration. So all of those areas of habitat really need to be restored, along with the rivers and the upper altitude habitat as well, for there to be abundant salmon once again. So we have to look at all of it.
Would you tell us about the new baby orcas that have arrived during the past year?
Yes. Beginning in late December of 2014, we had a new baby and then another one, then another one. There were 10 that were born, and 2 of them, unfortunately, didn't survive. But that leaves 8, so far that we know, that are still alive and doing well since late 2014. And that was after 2.5 years of no successful births, no newborns. So they've really kind of filled in. We have a baby boom, and it's great to see. Unfortunately, however, of the 8, 6 are males. There seems to be a skewed gender ratio there, and that may be because of inbreeding, and it's a very complicated way that that can bias the babies toward being males. But for whatever reason, only 2 females are in those 8. So the females are the ones that make more babies, so we wish we had more females.
What are the prospects for the baby orcas?
The prospects seem to be pretty good for these new babies, at least as long as their parents and their whole family can find enough to eat. One of the marvelous things about orcas is that they share their food. The adults, the reproductive age adults, will share their food with the very old and the very young. So there's a good chance that even if sometimes the adults, and this is not good for population biology, but the reproductive age males and sometimes females don't make it, may die if there's not enough food, and yet the young and the old are likely to make it because they do share their food.
What most needs to be done to protect orcas?
I think the most that needs to be done to protect the orcas is habitat restoration, and that can be in general in terms of every kind of river and wetland and shoreline and every kind of refuge for those juvenile salmon to give them a good healthy start before they get to sea, as well as the upper altitude habitat, especially the Snake River watershed up above the Snake River dams, which block access to those beautiful, pristine wilderness habitats in Idaho that they cannot get to for the most part because of those dams. And even worse is that the juveniles can't get downriver in time to get to the ocean to become adults.
You are tuned to the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on KEXP Seattle 90.3 FM, by mobile app, and on the web at kexp.org. I'm Diane Horn, and my guest is Howard Garrett, co-founder, director, and president of the board of the Orca Network. Our topic is Puget Sound Orcas and Orca Month. So this month, June, has been designated Orca Month. What is the purpose of Orca Month?
Yes, well, Orca Month actually was first designated 10 years ago by Governor Gregoire, and it was sort of an idea we had that, well, let's promote the awareness of our orcas by declaring a whole month Orca Month, and it coincided with the return of the orcas from the outer coast into the inland waters where people could see them and share their stories about them, so we just sort of designated the month and then had events during the month of June. But this year, Governor Inslee once again declared June to be Orca Awareness Month and issued a proclamation, and a whole alliance, a coalition of many environmental groups interested in salmon and habitat as well as orcas have joined in and created what is called the Orca Salmon Alliance. And the Orca Salmon Alliance began with an event at the Seattle Aquarium last October, but just had another one, in fact, just yesterday on the beach in West Seattle at the boathouse there. It was a wonderful all-day event, and there are many more events coming.
So what are some of the upcoming events that are planned for this year's 2016 Orca Month?
There will be a webinar planned on everything you want to know about orcas. Oh, and by the way, at the Orca Network Facebook page, there is an Orca Bite of the Day every day, so you'll learn little tidbits just by going to the Orca Network Facebook page. And on June 18th, there will be an all-day sort of seminar on the southern resident orcas, on everything that they need, everything that we know about them, and some music and some celebration, lots of information. And there will be pub talks to be announced, but that just amounts to certain pubs where they allow us to come in and sit down and talk orcas for an hour or two. And there are other events as well. You can find all of it by going to orcamonth.com.
Would you also speak about the Friday, June 24th March for Endangered Orcas?
Yes, the Friday, June 24th March was planned to take place in Olympia. But then it became known to us that Governor Inslee, who is who we were addressing with this march, will be in Seattle because he will be hosting President Obama that day. So we are now in the replanning stages of setting that march on June 24th for Seattle. So please keep tuned, and we will let you know. And the way to do that is at orcamonth.com and on the Orca Network Facebook page and our Orca Network website.
And what are you asking Governor Inslee to do?
We would like Governor Inslee to consider every possible way of restoring the Chinook salmon that these orcas depend upon. And that may involve some budgetary issues, some culvert removals, for instance, or every other kind of, you know, river and shoreline restoration that needs to be done, as well as consideration of removal of the four lower Snake River dams that are blocking the migration routes up to that pristine habitat in Idaho.
Would you also mention the town hall event that's coming up in Seattle?
Yes, there is a town hall event that is primarily being planned by Save Our Wild Salmon, and it will be to discuss the whole issue of salmon and orcas and the orcas' definite and desperate need for more Chinook salmon.
You've said a bit about this already, but would you outline the projects of the Orca Network?
Well, Orca Network has several different programs going. Our main one, our probably highest profile, is our sighting network, and that involves about now 13 or 14,000 people on our email list, and all the people who become citizen scientists just by sending in their reports. If they see orcas along the shoreline, and we have a big Google map that you can zoom into that locates more than 100 different viewpoints just in Puget Sound where people can look for whales from. And then we send an email report, a sort of a compilation of all the reports of the previous few days with videos and photos and issues and all sorts of other stories. So that's sort of the highest profile. But we also have our Whale Center. It's a sort of a storefront display with a lot of information. That's in Langley, Washington, the Langley Whale Center. Come on by anytime. And we have a stranding network. So we respond to calls when people see seals, sea lions, or any marine mammal that is on a beach and not doing well or has deceased. And we will get out some volunteers and do whatever needs to be done to examine or at least document that occurrence. And if we can do any help to the animals, we certainly will. And that's pretty much our programs.
Where and when can orcas best be viewed here in the Puget Sound area?
In Puget Sound, the orcas come down in search of chum salmon for the most part in the fall. Chum is sort of their side dish when they are very plentiful and Chinook are not. During October, November, they come down usually anywhere from 6 to 8 or 10 times each time for 24 or 48 hours, and they usually head all the way down past Seattle, around Vashon Island, looking for these chum salmon. So those are the months when we can see them down here.
What are some whale sightings that you've made personally during the last year?
Well, one of the most unusual sightings was 2 months ago when they came into the inner waters between Whidbey Island and the mainland, or Kameno Island, but to the east of Whidbey Island, which is north of Seattle, in the north end of Puget Sound, a little north of Puget Sound, actually. But they came, it was actually 12 members of two matrilines, the J-22s and J-17s, named after the elder females in each matriline, came in and spent 5 days going back and forth from a place called Holmes Harbor to a place called Penn Cove. And they just went, you know, up and down, and they were socializing most of the time. We expected to see a baby show up as if they had come in to make it their nursery, but we still don't know what they were doing there. But it was most unusual, but very convenient for us because we could just go to the side of the island and see the whales come by very slowly and socializing all the time. Very interesting behaviors.
What should boaters keep in mind if whales are nearby?
Boaters have a responsibility when they see whales, when they're anywhere near whales, to keep it quiet as much as possible, to be very mindful of the noise that their engines are making in the water. And the key term there to understand is what's called cavitation, the billions, really, of tiny little bubbles that are created whenever a boat speeds up or even slows down rapidly or turns or makes any fast movements, it creates all this turbulence in the water. And that is what is so loud, as well as any screaming engine if they're going fast. So consider it that you're in their home, you're in their front room, you're their living room. And So you should be respectful and go slow, kind of tiptoe around, and try not to disturb them. And if you do that, if as the whale watch boats are learning to do that, it doesn't create much disturbance for them if the boats are quiet.
Well, what's the message you'd like to leave our listeners with?
I'd like to leave our listeners with the message that we are so lucky, we are so privileged. There isn't anywhere else in the world that has so many whales, and not one but two completely different types. It's so fascinating to see them and to just enjoy their immense power and grace and their social lives, the way they roll around each other and travel together. And the more we get to know them, the more fascinating it is to know individuals and the families. And we are just so lucky to have this around, and we should do everything we can to make sure that they can stay healthy and stay around.
Well, thanks so much for being here, Howard.
Thank you for having me.
You are just listening to Howard Garrett, co-founder, director, and president of the board of the Orca Network. For more information, check on the web at orcanetwork.org and orcamonth.com. Again, orcanetwork.org and orcamonth.com. Sustainability segment interviews are available as podcasts, along with KEXP's music podcasts. Go to kexp.org, click on demand, and then podcasting. I'm Diane Horn. Thanks for listening, and be sure to tune in to the sustainability segment again next week on listener-powered 90.3 FM, by mobile app, and on kexp.org.